news about some compelling reading is spreading by word of mouth. The mouth in question belongs to Tina Brown. She's editor of a website called The Daily Beast, and she's also the former editor of magazines like Vanity Fair and The New Yorker. She's an omnivorous reader of articles and stories from all over, so this summer we've been asking what she's reading. The last time we spoke, you had sent us an article about writers who drink, who abuse substances, and I asked you if, as an editor, you preferred to work with people like that. You actually said yes, and now you've sent us an article about Annie Leibovitz, the famous photographer who used to work for you.
Indeed, yes. This current New York magazine has a big piece about Annie's big financial problems that she's in at the moment. Annie's $24 million in debt, which is pretty extraordinary when you consider it. But, you know, of course, I'm a great fan of Annie's. You know, working with her as I did at Vanity Fair, a lot of her problems really stem from her extraordinary perfectionism. This is a person who just wants to only focus on her work, to drill down to the very best picture. And she really will do anything it takes, whether it means flying people around the country or going into overtime or, you know, bringing people to the set or redoing the set or redoing the whole thing three times. She just doesn't really care, as long as she gets her picture. And, of course, that has often led her into a huge overtime and a great deal of financial issues, which we're now seeing coming to roost.
Although we should emphasize, she was spending your money when she did that.
Well, you know, I mean, I used to have to get a grip on her, and it was hard.
Sounds like from this article, the descriptions given in this New York Magazine article, that in her earlier life, Annie Leibovitz was relatively modest in her personal spending, her personal circumstances, except for a drug habit, but lived in a modest apartment, and that changed in recent years, which is part of her trouble now.
It did, and I think it was all part of the kind of borrowing on the never-never madness that everybody got into. I mean, Annie's a zeitgeist creature herself, and in a way, everything that's happened to her reflects the zeitgeist in which she's lived. I mean, she moved in a world of celebrities. She became the lover of Susan Sontag, the famous critic. She mixed with movie stars and rock stars and so forth. And after a time, that lifestyle starts to rub off. But I will say that I don't fear for Annie in the long run. She's a superb talent, and she's not really a person. She's not a Michael Jackson figure who wants to go off and live the life of craziness. She actually is a woman of simple taste. It's just that things got out of hand.
Buying two townhouses in Greenwich Village, spending millions of dollars renovating, and then having a terrible construction accident that added even more to that. Yeah, that's
indeed
out of hand. And some other trouble as well. I mean, lots of expenses to deal with.
Yeah, she did. She really did get out of hand. And, you know, unfortunately, she felt it would go on forever, the big ad contracts and the big American Express deals. And, of course, now the economy collapsed and a lot of those big deals are not there anymore.
This is maybe my favorite detail in the whole thing, that American Express wanted her at one point to endorse their card, and her credit had actually been so bad over the years they'd denied her the card.
That sounds like our Annie, absolutely.
So we have this person who is an obsessive perfectionist when it comes to photography, and then you send me this other article on your reading list, which is also about a different kind of obsessive personality, an article in The New Yorker from a couple of years ago about Asperger's syndrome.
Which has just become a new book, actually, called Parallel Play by Tim Page. It speaks very much to my heart because I have an Asperger's boy myself, George, who is now 23, 24. So I know what it's like to raise an Asperger's child. And this piece, which describes the isolation and the lack of kind of social ability to read clues and so forth, really spoke to what I have dealt with in my son, who is both so adorable in so many ways and yet in other ways just cannot really at times read the room in ways that anyone can who is raised, you know, without this affliction. For instance, my son might once said to somebody, "You could use a facelift."
Could they have used a facelift?
It was all true. And, you know, one of the things that was funny about it is how do you explain to somebody, you know, you're speaking the truth, but you can't speak the truth, darling. So I found this piece and this book now by Paige, you know, an extraordinarily moving account, really, from the inside of what it is like to feel pretty isolated, really, at times from the world and from the signals that it gives each other. It's not easy being these kids.
You have also sent us an article by the conservative writer Peggy Noonan, who seems to be obsessing about politics.
Yes, Peggy Noonan is one of my favorite conservative writers, actually. Peggy's a really good and thoughtful writer, and she's not a kind of unfair writer either. She has a point of view, but she's very wise. And she's concerned about Obama. She says, you know, he never seems to be leveling these days, only talking. And she kind of feels that this healthcare thing has gone wildly off track for him. She says that, you know, in a way, it's done something that no one could have expected. It's actually united the Republican Party because he hasn't had a clear vision. He hasn't had a clear point of view that he's been able to sell, instead of which he's overwhelmed everybody with too much at once. Actually, we had a good piece as well on the Daily Beast by Connors Friedendorf, which did also take issue with this and said, don't try to do everything at once.
In addition to some of the periodicals that you've sent us and you've been sending us, you've sent along a novel this time, or recommended a novel, Let the Great World Spin.
By Colm McCann, the brilliant, brilliant young Irish writer who's actually teaches English now at Hunter College in New York. This is an absolutely fascinating sort of poetic but gritty account of life in New York during the 70s. And it has a wonderful binding motif, which is the high wire walk of Pettit, who I think there was a movie made out of his antics where he walked between the two towers of the World Trade Center. There are four or five stories in this book, but they're all bound together by that summer day where they looked up and saw Pettit walking on that high wire as a kind of moment of a sort of still point in a turning world. Because that time of the 70s was a time of roughness and terrible recession in New York. New York was bankrupt. It was grimy. And so you have the stories of a young Irish priest working in the projects. You have the story of a hooker that he administers to from her point of view. You have the story of a wife who finds that her son has died in Vietnam. And you have the story of the nurse that the Irish priest was in love with. And they're all linked together. It's a bit like the movie Crash, but done from the point of view of New York in the 70s. I absolutely found it gripping.
Does it feel resonant in this time, given the economic situation in New York?
I mean, I have to say that it does feel a little bit as if we're heading that direction. When I read the story of Annie Leibovitz's excess and bankruptcy, and it feels like everywhere you turn, there is a story about somebody going broke.
Tina Brown, always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you.
Word of mouth from Tina Brown, editor-in-chief of The Daily Beast. And when you check the news headlines throughout the day at npr.org, you can also find links to the articles that Tina Brown discussed. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Renee Montaigne is in our studios tomorrow. I'm Steve Inskeep.